Hi, I'm Kim LaPree from the Teachers Need Teachers podcast, a part of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to now. Shows on the network are individually owned and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other interesting podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com.
Even when you bring in programs to promote and improve students' social emotional well-being, It is in turn going to improve their academics as well. Welcome to Devil's Advocate, a Leader of Learning podcast series. Join co-hosts Rochelle Danae Poth and me, Dan Krynas, as we tackle trending topics in education from all angles, backed by sound research, where no topic is too big or too small, and where you can be part of the action. Let's dive right in. Well, listeners, you may or may not have been waiting for this moment, but we want to welcome you back to the Devil's Advocate series here on the Leader of Learning podcast. And I would like to welcome back my partner here in the Devil's Advocate series, Rochelle Danae Poth. It's been a while. Hope you're doing well. I think school is probably still looking a little different from the norm, but I think we're coming back around to some semblance of normalcy, and I hope it's that way for you too. How are you? How have you been since we last recorded here? What's going on with you?
I know. Well, it's good to be back. Good to see you. Good to catch up. And time is just flying by. It's hard to believe that it's been a little over a year since school's closed and that we're still kind of working through all of the things we're working through. I mean, my school has been, or was hybrid, I should say, all since November, and then shifted to fully either in person or fully virtual. And so that preparing for that has been interesting. Just, I mean, we're not there yet, but almost. So having all of the extra desks in the room and just rethinking, you know, it's like how to figure out how to manage everything again. So it's a lot, but I mean, it's good. It's been great to see the kids and feel somewhat a little bit more normal, like the normal school experience, and has definitely pushed me, and I know all educators, to try new things and to face a lot of different challenges and so forth. But I don't know. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, my school, my district is, we're just about ready to start really getting more kids back in person. We've been in person on a hybrid schedule in our secondary schools since day one this school year. But actually starting this coming week, we are doing away with the hybrid schedule. And we are saying that you students are going to be either full-time in-person or full-time remote. And I'm pleasantly surprised, honestly, by that. I love the idea, but I thought it would happen really at the beginning of next school year. And I'm pleasantly surprised, and I'm glad that the district wants to try it over the last couple of full months of the school year this year. So I'm looking forward to it. I think that it'll be at least a little bit easier on teachers. I don't know that it'll be easy enough yet, but at least you don't have to worry about two separate groups of in-person students. It's either you're in or not, and that's it.
Right. Yeah, it is. It has definitely been a challenge to balance that, because even some of the students that chose to be coming in, you know, group A on Monday, Tuesday, group B on Thursday, Friday, on some days decided to stay home, or some of the students that were virtual came in once in a while, and just not necessarily knowing what to plan for each day. It's kept it interesting. But again, I mean, if we've learned nothing else, it's learning to be flexible and dealing with like technology and anything stepping in our way that we have a plan set, and then trying to figure out, okay, I need a backup to the backup to the backup plan I had.
Yeah. Now, getting into the topic that we want to discuss here, kind of piggybacking off of what we're saying, you know, COVID and quarantining and hybrid schedules and distance learning has really thrown education for a loop. I think we're in a much better place clearly now than we were a year ago. But having said that, we've had to shift and we've had to refocus our efforts and energies. And I think one of those areas, I think it's safe to say that one of those areas has been a heightened awareness and more of an emphasis on mental health, and that goes both for educators and students. And along with that comes social emotional learning for students. And just to preface this for the listeners, we were just talking before we hit record too. I don't know that you can really play devil's advocate here, because I don't think that anyone can argue that social emotional learning or mental health is not important. However, I think the devil's advocate side comes into this when we still unfortunately have educators who are arguing that spending time on understanding mental health and certainly bringing in aspects of social emotional learning are taking away from time that should be spent solely on teaching content. And just to give a real world example, shortly after I started in a new role in my district, I was sort of met head on by a teacher who questioned, not me personally, but asked me about why I felt like the district that we work in wants teachers to spend less and less time in their content and more time on this other fluffy stuff. And man, that really set me off. Like, to be honest, it really got under my skin, because I was like, here's a teacher who just doesn't get it, you know? And I think that in 2021, we needed to be spending more time on this regardless. But certainly, while the pandemic is still going on and schools are looking very different from how they did in the past, it's a no-brainer for me. What about you?
Yeah, it's that also surprises me, the comment and so forth, and the fluff. It's definitely not fluff. And the other thing about it too that I think that people might tend to forget is, like, there are so many ways that we can focus on social emotional learning skills in our classroom without it being like just another thing you have to add on top of it. And I think initially when people hear about it, oh, you know, what do I have to do to bring that into my classroom, or how much is it going to take? Like, where do I start? But then once you think about the benefits, I mean, we need it for ourselves as educators, and our students definitely need it. So we have to make that, we should make that part of our classroom so that it prepares students for the future and just everyday life. Like, we need to have those skills to cope with things, mental health. And it's another topic too, that hasn't often been talked about in education until, I mean, I've noticed an increase in the people talking about it in the past year. So I think prior to that, it was talked about, but not as much. And so I think just with everything that has happened since the start of the pandemic last year, it's brought a lot of important issues to light that should have already been part of the school setting and our plans anyway, I think.
I agree. And I love how you brought up the word benefits and really drawing attention to the fact that taking away, quote unquote, taking away time from the content doesn't mean that students aren't learning and growing. You know, one of the things that I've been kind of adamant about during the pandemic over the last, I don't know, 13 months-ish that we've been dealing with this is this learning loss, the idea that students aren't learning enough or aren't learning quick enough because they're going through all the things they're going through. And I hate that, because I think they're learning much more. If you think about sort of the real world life skills, soft skills that some people talk about sometimes, I think they've gotten that more over the past year plus than they would have if they were just going through school sort of more the traditional way. Mm-hmm. And so I love that you brought up those benefits and that taking time away from the content to deal with the fluffier stuff, the social emotional learning, maybe even some restorative practices, has benefits to students and can even benefit students academically as well as socially. And right. I did look up some research and they talk about that, and we'll get there maybe in a few minutes, but let me back up for a second. I'm looking at an article from the APA, the American Psychological Association. It's called Safeguarding Student Mental Health. It came out in September 2020, so pretty timely, pretty relevant still. And they say that, and this is according to the CDC, who we all know well at this point from going through the pandemic, they say each year an estimated 1 in 5 U.S. children experience a mental, emotional, or behavioral disorder, including anxiety, depression, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, and disruptive behavioral disorders. Yet, only about 20% of them receive care for those issues. And that's according to the CDC. So when you think about it, 20% of students deal with issues of mental health and social emotional well-being. And only 20% of them actually get help for it. And those statistics essentially come from even before COVID time. So you have to assume that it's been worse since.
Yeah. I think I might have seen, when you said that article, I was like, that sounds familiar. I did read something, but it wasn't the same one. But I had read something else that was talking about when they did surveys, like asking teachers and students early on around this time last year. And then again, I think it was in the fall, and they were, and I think it came from maybe Yale and Castle. So castle.org for anybody that's listening and is not familiar, great site to go to. But they said that like the top five, I think, and I probably won't remember all of them, but they were asking people, you know, how are you feeling about like everything with school, with work, with whatever. And the most common between like students and teachers were, you know, anxious, they were afraid, they were worried, depressed, sad, feeling overwhelmed. Overwhelmed was like the number one used word,
you know,
across the board.
Sorry to cut you off. I think I found the same article, or at least an article that references the same study. So yep, here it is. At the end of March, so this goes back about a year, to sort of the beginning of the pandemic, when most schools moved to distance learning, researchers at the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence, which is, by the way, that's where Dr. Mark Brackett does the ruler approach and really has become sort of the leading expert and program along with Castle on social emotional learning. So here goes. They surveyed more than 5,000 US teachers. They asked them to list the most frequent emotions they felt each day. The top five responses were anxious, fearful, worried, overwhelmed, and sad. And by far, anxiety was the most frequent response. So once again, anxiety or anxiousness, fearful, worried, overwhelmed, and sad, with anxiety being by far number one. And then actually in early May, so a couple months later, they sent the same survey questions to special education teachers specifically. And it said that in addition to the anxiety, fear, and other things that teachers had mentioned, just a couple months earlier, these special educators shared that they also felt exhausted, frustrated, and confused. That's what the research shows. Mm-hmm. That's what those surveys showed.
Yeah, that's a lot of emotions. And what do you do with, I mean, we have to do something, right? Because we're with students when they're with us most of the day. We have to also help ourselves. And if we ourselves are not doing well and worrying, you know, doing our own check-ins and having the support system, then how are we going to provide the best that we can for students too?
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You know, again, like, this is always an issue. And if you don't think it is, you need to maybe look up some of the research as well. And hopefully what we're sharing here will help you understand that from here on in, if we haven't realized already that teacher and student mental health is important, and specifically social emotional learning, and spending some time on explicitly teaching and working with students on it, if you don't know the importance of it, then hopefully this episode will help you realize it. Hopefully this research will resonate with you. But definitely we need a change in education. And that's why, you know, that was the motivation behind doing this topic here in this episode, because when that teacher asked that of me, goes back a couple months now, but man, that just really stuck with me, and it angered me, you know. And I'm not even a classroom teacher, and I don't necessarily work directly with students a lot of the time now in my role, but I just know how important it is. And when he asked that, I was like, man, you're the person who we need to understand how important it is. And going back to that article, it says, you know, pre-2020, there was already evidence that mental health problems in young people were on the rise. The 12-month prevalence of major depressive disorders in the U.S. Increased in adolescence from 8.7% in 2005 to 11.3% in 2014, which I know is a little outdated, but essentially, that means that we've had a problem, and it's been ever so increasingly important to get help for our young people. And I'm going to bring up something that I know is a little maybe morbid, and it's tough to talk about, but suicide rates increased among people ages 10 to 24 from 6.8 per 100,000 people in 2007 to 10.6 in 2017. And again, that's a few years prior even to COVID, and it has to have gone up since. And when I hear, when I see those statistics, they're kind of the same statistics that they talk about with COVID, in the sense that you're talking about infection rates per 100,000 people. And I don't know about you, but I think in my area, or all areas, they talk about 15 or more. 15 out of 100,000 people or more, that's a very high infection rate. And now you're talking about almost 11 people per 100,000, and that was 4 years ago.
Right.
It probably went up by then, you know, since then. That's a lot of people that we need to be concerned about. It's almost as many people who are getting COVID who are actually, you know, committing suicide and taking their lives. That's just nuts.
Yeah, it is. And I have, just between, goodness, Twitter chats and blog posts that I've read, or just even in some conferences I've been in, one, there have been so many more topics or presenters focus on mental health, social emotional learning, even just in my emails, things coming in. But that has been a big point of discussion, is just the suicide rate, the number of people that are seeking, you know, inpatient or, of course, outpatient treatment for depression, and the age groups of it too. And I forget the breakdown, so I don't want to, you know, state it incorrectly. But I remember when I read it, I was kind of surprised at the age groups where that was kind of, you know, a higher frequency. And I'm pretty sure that, like, the age group that I'm in was one of the ones that was higher. And I think younger people too, just because, like, not being able to socialize and all the normal things that they're used to was part of the reason why that was changing. But it's pretty scary. We have a lot of friends in common that have been doing presentations and research on mental health and social emotional learning, and they are always ones that I defer to, especially when, you know, in my own classroom a couple of years ago, when people asked me about social emotional learning, they just said, "Are you doing SEL?" And I said, "Well, what's that?" Because I didn't know that I knew the words. I wasn't, like, instantly familiar with the SEL, and I had never heard of castle.org. And I panicked because I thought, wow, here's another thing that I'm not doing in my classroom. I didn't think of it as, like, oh, it's something else that I have to add on and worry about. I was just concerned, you know, what had I been missing? And then when I looked at castle.org and saw what it stood for and what the competencies in the areas were, I realized I was already doing a lot of things in my classroom. I just need to be doing more. And I need to be checking in with students and colleagues as well. And in this past year, I think that's one thing that the technology, well, there's many benefits to technology, but if this had happened 15 years ago, 10 years ago, even, I mean, I wonder what the numbers would have been, the statistics would be, for people, that feeling of isolation where you didn't have, like, this, where we can see each other, or all the forms of communication, or all the resources that are out there that are instantly available. And not could you necessarily go and meet somebody in person, but to be able to have, you know, a life coach, for example, or somebody that's there to mentor you or to listen and to check in with through technology. I mean, there are so many possibilities. And I kind of veered from what you were talking about a little bit, but I'm just thinking, whatever, I have to find that one and see if I can share it with you so you can put that out there. But I was surprised by the numbers, because there's sometimes you just don't really think about those things, you know, the severity of them, I guess you should say. And there are not always clear signs that somebody is suffering from depression or is at that level. And, you know, you always hear people say, oh, well, you know, I didn't know they seemed like, and that's why it's so important to check in with students, with colleagues, with friends, family, and really be able to understand each person that we're interacting with so we can support them.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's been said before, but just to reiterate, you know, everybody brings some baggage. Everybody's going through something. You mentioned that, yeah, we have mutual friends who are now really bringing social emotional learning to light. But I also know of a couple of people. One in particular is a podcasting friend who, when the pandemic really went full force a year ago last spring, was feeling some emotional things, some you know, sickness, if you will, mental health wise, and was finally, I guess, diagnosed with legitimate depression and anxiety. And this person had kind of felt that way for a while, but I think the pandemic sort of pushed it over the edge a little bit. And I know that after all was said and done, this individual, this educator, this podcaster felt relieved that not only did they finally seek help and treatment for it, but that someone actually had a legitimate explanation for what they had been feeling really for a long time. But again, even more so during the pandemic. And, you know, like you say, at least now we do have ways to connect with others that we didn't, you know, 10, 15, 20 plus years ago. But you know, that's still not enough when you talk about the importance of real physical and interpersonal connections, that when some people don't have that, it's just so difficult for them to cope and to deal with whatever is going on mentally with them, whatever is inside their head. Mm-hmm. They're just sitting with it and trying to deal with it, and they can't.
Right. Yeah, it's go ahead.
No, I was just going to go back to before we were talking about, because we've kind of gotten a little dark now too, some of the benefits to bringing social emotional learning into schools. And you talked about, like, in your classroom where you first heard about SEL and you sort of worried that you might not have been doing it or doing enough. But, you know, at this point, we are seeing, and I have the research in front of me again, that says that not only does it benefit students clearly in terms of socialization, mm-hmm. and emotional well-being, but also academically. So let me just go back to this article again, where from the CDC and from the APA, they're saying that in light of these trends that we've been seeing, more than half of U.S. states, and by trends, I mean students in particular who have been negatively affected and impacted in terms of their mental health, mm-hmm. More than half of the U.S. states have passed laws or enacted policies requiring schools to have a mental health curriculum or include mental health in maybe their health classes or other standards for education. And they specifically say that supporting children now, mm-hmm. will have big payoffs later. And so I really just wanted to get back into kind of the advantages and benefits to addressing and dealing with and educating. And let's, I really want to keep throwing teachers in there as well, teachers and students, about mental health. And specific to the point about how it improves students academically, mm-hmm. There was somewhat of a separate study done that was also put out by the APA, where they did a meta-analysis of 213 school-based social and emotional learning programs. So programs where SEL is explicitly taught in schools. They found that programs improved students' social and emotional skills, attitude, and behavior, which I think is kind of obvious. Right. But what might not be is that the participants showed improvements in academic performance reflected by an overall 11 percentile point gain in achievement. Okay. Now, I'm not looking at that study in particular, so I don't know quite what measure they used to show that 11 percentile point gain. But that to me is pretty darn significant. You know, and in a nutshell, in layman's terms, what that means is even when you bring in programs to promote and improve students' social emotional well-being, it is in turn going to improve their academics as well.
Yeah. And to kind of follow up on what you said, when I've been doing, when I started to learn more about it, and actually in the past year, you know, I've done a lot of different conference presentations on different topics over the years, and SEL has been one that I've done probably the most in the last year, which is interesting because, like I said, it wasn't something that I felt that I knew a ton about, but I pushed myself to learn more about it. And so when looking at, and I'm also very interested in like the future of learning, the future of education. So looking at, you know, the five competencies and why do we need to provide opportunities for students in our classrooms to build these skills? Well, because they are directly in relation to the skills that they need later on in the future, whatever they're doing. If they leave school and they go into the career or into a certain career, they go to college. But if you look at like the World Economic Forum, was looking at, you know, the skills and employers, the outlook, whatever you want to call it for the future. And there were things like, you know, communication, collaboration, problem solving, resilience, teamwork, and dealing with stress, of course. And there are so many others. And those are directly related to the five competencies and social emotional learning skills. So it definitely makes sense. And then within each of those, I mean, just throwing out, for example, like self-awareness. Being able as a student, as an educator, to be able to figure out, you know, what are my strengths? What are my interests, I'm trying to make a Spanish word out of that one. And also, you know, managing stress and emotions. And those are things that we all need. And so it makes sense that if we give students opportunities in our classrooms to work through all of that, to develop their skills, to self-assess over time, to become self-aware of where they are in terms of learning, to have opportunities to build relationships with their peers and all of that, and have that support system in place, then it by far will benefit them, not just now, but far into the future, no matter what it is that they do. And then also it's good for us too, because we're modeling it, we're practicing it with our students. And I think it pushes us to be even more mindful of it in our own lives, in addition to doing that in the classroom. And, you know, the research has shown that those competencies do impact the success later on in the workplace or whatever it is that the students engage in. And so, yeah, I think, you know, we have to do something, and I try to do something every single day or think about, okay, now how does this apply to helping students become self-aware or socially aware, or is there a stressful experience? And then as a teacher, I'm often sharing more so than I ever did before, you know, my own experiences, because for students to be able to relate to us and to build those relationships, you know, with us, with them, it makes a big difference to know, like, yeah, you know, when I was your age, I struggled with this. Or even as an adult, I say these are challenges and things that we all experience. And so how do we work through them? Because I don't think challenges and frustrations and fears and that overwhelming feelings we may have will disappear anytime soon.
Those are great points. And I especially like the one that you mentioned about how, again, just to reset the conversation a little bit, you know, we were sort of motivated to do an episode like this on a topic like this because there are clearly educators like the one that I work with out there who believe that we are taking too much time away from content to spend on things like social emotional learning. But what you just said, I think, is reason enough to play devil's advocate and say, this is why. And not only are we trying to make our students more socially and emotionally healthy and mentally healthy, but we're also trying to prepare them for the future. And by the future, I don't mean just getting out of middle school or high school. We mean like actually succeeding in, you know, life and career beyond. And part of that, like you said, and we've talked, I think we've talked on here before about the World Economic Forum and, and the skills that they say that students are going to need 5, 10, 15 years down the road. Definitely, you know, getting them prepared for what they're going to face is huge. And I don't know, like, I'm not sure about you. I think this might even be a separate conversation, but it becomes relevant now. Like, I don't know about you. I felt like when I got out of college, I definitely went through a bit of the so-called quarter life crisis where, okay, I'm out, I'm done with my formal education. Perhaps I've gone back a few times since. But assuming that I was done with my formal education, now what? Mm-hmm. Like now I'm in the real world. And how do I navigate that? How do I succeed in that aspect of life? I did kind of struggle with that. I felt sort of lost. And I think that potentially some of these types of skills and some of this type of quote unquote education mm-hmm. is perhaps more valuable and more important than the quote unquote real content.
Right. I agree. And I wish that when I went to high school and in college, that these were some of the topics of conversation and some of the skills that teachers were helping us to build. And that's not to say that they weren't. There are some things that when I got to college, I didn't know how to set goals so much. And I didn't know how to deal with some stress and self-assess or anything. And that was something that I kind of had to learn on my own. And I wish I would have had a little bit of guidance on that. And so I think that's why it's so important for us to provide those opportunities for students in our classrooms. And it can be simple things too. Lots of possibilities out there. But again, we can't predict what we or they would be necessarily doing 5-10 years from now, but we still need these same skills no matter what that is.
So you just mentioned something that provides a great segue into kind of how I wanted to wrap up a little bit and take the last little segment here, so to speak, in this episode to talk about how do we bring it into our schools? How do we bring it into our classrooms? And maybe even in a way where, again, you know, I wanted to play devil's advocate because I know that there are teachers out there who feel like we're taking too much time away from the content. And I hate that, but I understand that that's a reality and that's how some educators feel, hopefully not too many. Mm-hmm. But how can we maybe bring in aspects of social emotional learning or even programs that are dedicated to it without feeling like we're taking away from the content too much or without making educators uncomfortable that they're not going to be able to prepare their students well enough for promotion or, dare I say, even to do well on standardized assessments, but understand that this is still very valuable and very important.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty of it is there are so many different ways to do that. And simple things like one thing that worked really well for me a couple of years ago that I started with like project-based learning, where students have an opportunity to be independent, where they're exploring something they're interested in. They can choose to collaborate with their classmates. They have to communicate with their teacher. They're also, in my case, as a language teacher, they're becoming more socially aware. They're building empathy because they're learning about other places where Spanish is spoken. Decision-making, you know, how do I create something? I mean, there are a lot of potentials in that, but that's a little bit more extensive. But even just small things, like in my classroom where I first noticed it was I was doing like game-based learning or using stations where the students were working in small groups and kind of figuring things out on their own, working together. They're figuring out how to collaborate. They're managing some stress at times, like if they had to design their own game, for example, and then working through that with their classmates, building relationships in the process. And I had students who would say, you know, I really like class so much better this year because we have these opportunities where I'm not just sitting and listening. It's more social. I can get to know my classmates. They can answer questions. I feel like I can answer their questions. We support one another. And at first, I didn't know how I felt about that because I was like, wow, what does that mean? How you felt about class last year? But what it took for me was to basically, again, this is years ago, I got rid of the rows of desks in my room. I stopped being the one talking at the students. I created more space for them to engage and interact, which now if we're fully virtual or hybrid, it can still be done. I mean, I think that's more important than ever for students to feel and for us to feel as part of that community with them. And so using some of the tools out there, I mean, Buncee is one that I have used for years. It's always my go-to because even at the start of this school year, students weren't, you know, I know a lot of my students because I'm the only Spanish teacher, but for any teacher who doesn't have the chance for students to come in and for students to get to know each other, having them create this presentation where they can put in a short video so you get to see them, you get to hear them, interact with them, and then you start to build those relationships, but they can also be used for check-ins. Even short things like Google Forms, Google Surveys, I know teachers are using lots. I could go on and on. There are just so many out there, and often teachers are already doing something. They're using a tool, they have a certain method, and that is all you need. You just need to maybe add a little tweak to it, and there you have it.
Yeah, I know, like for me, in full transparency, I've probably been out of being in the classroom and as a regular classroom teacher longer than I have been in. But I actually took way back when in the classroom, I took an idea that I got from being in a fraternity in college, where essentially we would sit in a circle and pass an object to one another. In most cases, it was the gavel that the president of the fraternity would use in our meetings. And whoever had the gavel would get to speak, and they would basically just share whatever they wanted. And I brought this idea into my classroom when we had some downtime, usually with my homeroom class. And I don't know if I called it anything at that point, but I had some kind of object that usually students would be able to pass easily by usually throwing across the room or to whoever wanted to take a turn. And whoever had that object would get to speak and share and just get out whatever was on their mind. Mm-hmm. And I could vividly remember one time where I had a student break down in tears because I want to say it had something to do with the fact that he just didn't feel like he had as many friends as he wanted. Like, there was definitely something socially that was bothering him. Mm-hmm. And we got to the point where he felt comfortable enough and vulnerable enough to share that with everyone. And it was like such an amazing bonding moment. And I did that throughout the years as a classroom teacher until I realized that's a restorative circle to some degree. When restorative, you know, I'm dating myself a little bit, but I started teaching in 2006-07 school year.
Okay.
So, you know, this was 15 years ago. And to be honest, I don't know if I heard about restorative circles until about maybe 5 to 10 years ago. So this predates that learning for me, but I realized that's essentially what I was doing. Okay. And, For me, I think a great way to bring in social emotional learning are those types of restorative circles or opportunities that the teacher and students get to just kind of share what's on their minds. As a matter of fact, I put out on Twitter about a year ago, maybe a little more than a year ago, because I don't know if we were during COVID yet. One of the teachers that I was supporting as a coach kind of just shut down what she was doing in class that day to basically have a restorative circle with her class. And initially, when I went into her classroom, I felt a little disappointed that they weren't spending more time on the content until I really stepped back, figuratively speaking, and realized that the conversation that they were having and the time spent on just getting to know each other and getting to dive more deeply into the feelings that people were having was mm-hmm. probably in that moment way more important than whatever content right. they were trying to cover. So I love opportunities for that. I find them to be fairly simple to implement, may or may not take a ton of time away from the content, but can be super important and super valuable to creating the relationships, getting students to just get in touch with their feelings, but to really get to know one another better as well.
Yeah, I agree. And you bring up like the restorative. I mean, that is something I didn't know anything about until probably 4 years ago, maybe, if not three. It's just, you know, I went to school and got my teaching degree in a very different time. And so all of the, you know, teacher preparation, like what is out there today for pre-service teachers and teacher education programs is so different. And so a lot of the things that I probably, I don't know, that it's probably taught now in those programs, it wasn't part of my experience. And so I've had to really learn a lot of these things on my own. And so I hear people say, oh yeah, I've been doing this for 15 years. And I'm like, well, I just learned about that 3 years ago, but that's okay. Because like the important thing is that we're aware of it. We know that there's these resources out there, these practices that we can bring into our classroom that don't take a lot of time, because especially now, I mean, who has a ton of extra time? And it has been a very difficult year. I mean, the end of last school year was tough. Over the summer, thinking about what is school going to look like? And then now here we are, you know, almost finished with this school year. And I know that teachers have grown in so many different ways, but we also have to make sure that we take care of ourselves and keep checking in with students. And that's something that I became even more aware of last year around this time. And so I've been more mindful of bringing some practices into my classroom and kind of focusing more on, you know, how are the students doing? Like, I want to teach them Spanish, of course, and STEAM, but I also need to know that they're okay. And so I've made the move of pushing some of the content aside at times to focus more on how they're doing, but done it in a way that it's kind of a balance where I'm still giving the content, but I'm also checking in on them and just thinking it to myself, you know, what is the most important here? And that might be another topic for another day. I might have just opened up another can of like, oh, wait, she's getting rid of all of the things she's teaching, but I'm really not. It's just, it's forced me to think about what is the most important and finding the balance of the content versus like the well-being and the mental health and wellness, I should say.
Well, and also an understanding of the fact that quote unquote learning does not 100% mean content and skills and standards. It can mean learning social skills and learning sort of those future ready, softer skills. And I don't even think they're soft skills anymore. Well, I hate that term now. But those skills that are proving to be ever more important as we head into the future for our students than before. You know, I also wanted to bring up like an advisory program, kind of similar to what I mentioned about restorative circles and restorative practices. But I have found in my experience at a few different schools who do those advisory programs, it's yet another opportunity that is usually outside of the normal content-driven classes where you're outside of the curriculum now, and maybe you have a separate curriculum or not that is a little bit more aligned to social emotional learning, but it's really an opportunity for students and usually with one or a couple of teachers to come together. And a lot of times I think it's in smaller groups to just talk about and learn about and work on things that aren't that kind of skills and standards type of learning, but it is more of those social emotional skill type learning. And, you know, I remember doing some like team building activities and other things that not only got students to reflect and learn more about themselves, but certainly learn more about each other. Right. I think that's ultimately the goal of an advisory program. But for me, that's another opportunity that schools and teachers can take to maybe bring in more social emotional learning without necessarily feel like it's taking away from all the other stuff that needs to get done.
Yeah, I could not agree any more with what you just said.
Awesome. And I think, again, just going back to what we talked about at the beginning of the episode, you know, I don't think either of us were here talking. We couldn't talk about why you shouldn't spend time doing social emotional learning or dealing with mental health in teachers and students. So I'm not surprised that we're agreeing with each other so much, but I am still somewhat surprised and frankly disappointed that there are teachers out there who still feel like it's taking away from the academics and from the content and from the skills and standards. And to them, I say, I hope that you realize sooner rather than later that that is education in the year 2020 and beyond. During the pandemic, but even into the future, as we've already said, and I don't want to repeat ourselves too much, but these are things that are not only important for students' social emotional health, but also for their academic success. And understanding that will certainly help your students, but should help you as an educator as well. So that's really how I want to wrap up. I'm glad that we agreed. And I think we kind of tag teamed on the devil's advocate part, because I felt like throughout this whole conversation, we were both really pushing back on those teachers out there who still may feel like I really need to spend more time on my content, and I can't be bothered by any of this SEL stuff.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. I hope people take away from it too, that like, it doesn't require a lot. It's not that it takes a ton of extra time. There are a lot of easy ways to get started with it, and it can be part of every day.
Excellent point. So again, you know, in the show notes, we'll post some of the resources that we shared here. But I think that was a great point to end on as well, that Rochelle, you said like, it doesn't take a lot of time or effort, and it is important. And let's try and find, whether it's the resources that we shared or if anyone else has resources or thoughts or ideas on this, please don't hesitate to reach out on social media, by email. We do have the Flipgrid where you can respond to that as well, and I'll share that link in the show notes. But let us know. You know, again, there are a lot of resources out there, and they're popping up all the time because people are realizing more and more that this is important, and they're figuring out that they can bring it into schools in a way that doesn't necessarily feel like it's taking too much time or effort. So I'd love to hear more about it. I think we shared some things, but there's a lot more out there. So I've loved this conversation. I think it's super important and timely. And I just thank you for doing this again with me. I know it's been a little while, kind of my fault, probably more than anything, but
it's all good.
I love the conversation and thanks for being here and thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you. Good to talk with you again today too.
Thank you so much for joining us. We encourage you to help contribute to the series. If you want to suggest topic ideas or comment on any of the conversations we have about trending topics in education, please participate on Flipgrid using the topic code Devil's Advocate or visiting flipgrid.com/Devil's Advocate. If you haven't done so yet, don't forget to subscribe to the Leader of Learning podcast on your favorite podcast app. Also, if you enjoy the content shared on the show, please recommend this podcast to others. I would also appreciate it if you'd leave a positive rating and review on iTunes or Podchaser. Links to leave ratings and reviews can be found in the show notes. Thanks, and see you again for another episode of The Devil's Advocate next month.